Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org. Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. In the past few years, bear attacks in Florida have increased, sparking a lot of debate by state officials and its citizens about what to do. Fortunately, no one has been killed. But you know, it's almost unfair to call these incidences attacks or maulings, like the newspapers report. We are building right up into the bears' natural habitats, attracting them with food. Our dogs are getting them angry. I mean, what do you expect? But now that a few more encounters with injuries have taken place, Florida is considering allowing bear hunting, currently illegal in the state, as a solution. Nick Wiley, executive director of the Florida Fish and Game Commission, said the hunting strategy is not an end-all and be-all solution, but he believes it's time for it to be considered. Scott Davis, president of the Central Florida Dog Hunters and Sportsmen's Association, apparently believes there are too many bears. He said they're getting pushed out of their natural area due to their overpopulation. That's pushing them into neighborhoods. Lyle McCandless, president of the Big Cypress Sportsmen's Alliance, said, quote, "Don't wait until there's another attack. Now, here we are with maulings happening. Unfortunately, this is something we should have addressed a lot earlier." So what really is happening in Florida, and what can be done to make the situation safer for people? What will permit the bears to live the most natural lives possible, even as we gradually take away their natural range? And should there be any role for hunting the bears? Here to cover these questions and more is Laura Bevan, Southern Regional Director of the Humane Society of the United States. Welcome to the program, Laura.
Thank you.
Laura, I have read conflicting reports concerning the numbers of recent attacks by bears in Florida. So how many are we really talking about? And are the reports of recent increases of attacks accurate?
Well, we have had a short spate of 4 attacks. Now, it's important to note that the attacks were all in residential or urban areas. 3 of the attacks were people that had dogs that came up upon a mama bear with her cubs in the garbage. So they were in the garbage rummaging around with no fault of the person with the dog, but they came up and startled them. And everyone knows that a mama and her cubs, mom's very territorial, very protective. So those were situations, is not anyone's fault, except the fact that humans put garbage out to attract that mama and her babies in the first place.
Right.
The 4th attack happened to be just in the same neighborhood as where people were actually feeding the bears, taking photographs of themselves feeding and petting the bears. So when that was stopped, now we have bears that are used to being fed, and a woman, you know, comes out with her garbage or comes out in the morning and the garbage is there and the bear is in it, she startles it and the bear attacks her. So in all situations, the bears were in neighborhoods or in an urban area. One of them was a grocery store. And there were cubs involved, dogs involved, but the common denominator is garbage. These were not, attacks in the woods. These were in urban areas.
Yeah. Laura, give us a little history of the Florida black bear and its populations. I know they were near extinction not too long ago.
Yeah, they were near extinction earlier in the 1930s. They were almost all gone, primarily because of hunting. And then that was stopped. The numbers, slowly came back. In the 1970s, they were considered threatened. Hunting still continued until the 1990s, and I'm proud to say I was one of the people that led the charge to stop hunting. The Game Commission now admits there were probably only 300 bears in the entire state of Florida, at that time, but we had to force them to stop hunting. So that happened in 1993. Now, fast forward 20 years later, they estimate there may be 3,000 bears, maybe more. Their study in, 12 years ago was not, as comprehensive as we would like. They're doing more DNA testing studies now, so we'll find out a better idea of what the population is. But Florida is a huge state, and the black bear is a subspecies that is distinct only to Florida. So it's important that we, keep the Florida black bear and each of the populations within Florida. It's all over the state, so they've become subpopulations of that subpopulation. They're genetically different now because they have been so isolated. So it's a delicate balance. They just came off the threatened list completely in 2012, and now we're talking about hunting and killing at least 275 bears during a one-week hunt in October, but still between roadkill, poaching, and they have a new one-strike rule, meaning if the bear causes trouble and is threatening in any way, it gets killed right away. And so those numbers are all going to skyrocket.
Now, you mentioned these recent encounters or attacks were caused by food being available. You know, Laura, if you go to almost any community where bears are, like mountain communities, all you see are bear-proof garbage containers, and everyone is sort of bear aware. It's taken very seriously. Has Florida been neglectful in doing what it should to prevent human-bear interactions?
Yes. I can unequivocally say that Florida has not taken issues seriously enough. There are pockets of the state, areas of the state like Hurlburt Air Force Field in the northwest Florida area, where they have instituted Bear Smart programs, and they have seen their conflicts drop dramatically. In other parts of the state, some isolated communities, they've gotten serious and said, you cannot have your garbage out in the morning. You put it out that morning, not the night before, or they've gone to the bear proof, and they've seen their bear complaints drop dramatically. If the food isn't there, the bears do not stay. If they move through the area or coming through that area, they look around, nothing to eat, let's move on. The areas that, Florida is now the third largest state in the country, and we have built into, as you mentioned earlier, into the woods. People like living in wooded areas and then are shocked when you put out food and the bears come.
Yeah.
So we need to do a lot more. And I have traveled, to Canada, out west, out into the Smokies, bear-proof trash cans everywhere. We have got to get smart, bear smart, and institute these true bear-proof garbage can programs so that our bears go back into the woods and are not getting a free meal, because that free meal can mean their death.
Laura, let's talk about the proposed lifting of this hunting ban.
Well, when we had the attacks of the people, so it was in a short time period, it wasn't, and then there have been no more, but it encouraged, the Game Commission or the Wildlife Commission to reopen the discussions on hunting. And we have known for the 20 years in which there has been the ban that they wanted to start hunting again. It's brought up every few years, and we've managed to beat it back. When they delisted the bear, the Florida black bear is threatened in 2012, we were worried that one of the primary purposes of that was to open up hunting. So unfortunately, the attacks that happened only, gave them the fuel they needed to get the fire going. They very quickly came up with, within their bear management plan, the proposal for hunting, and it's gone from there. Now, scientifically, there is no basis for hunting in the woods impacting the bears that are going to the neighborhoods and eat garbage. There's many studies out there that say there is no connection. Unfortunately, that's what the Wildlife Commission is encouraging. They'll say, well, you know, it shouldn't have a direct impact, but it's a tool in the toolbox, and maybe if we reduce the numbers in the woods, maybe there'll be less bears in the trash. But science has never backed that up.
Very
Our
good.
Our concern, in addition to the hunting of the bears, is that people are hearing the hunt issue and believing that now they're going to be safe, that now they don't have to worry about their garbage, and they don't have to, change their behavior because the hunt's going to, take out the bears and they won't have bears in their trash anymore. And there's no connection between the two. So it's just, it's basically a ridiculous argument with the purpose of it to start hunting again and appease the bear hunters who have wanted to get back and kill Florida black bears for 20 years.
Don't go away. More with Laura Bevin with the Humane Society of the United States. You're listening to Animals Today.
If you're like most people, you have lots of plans. A financial plan, an eating plan, an exercise plan, a career plan. You also need a plan for the care of your pets when you're no longer able to provide it. Every day, animals are sent to shelters, terrified and confused, or they're euthanized because their owners have become incapacitated or died. Some people don't give the future a thought. Others assume family members will care for their pets. A better way is to name caregivers and provide detailed instructions about your pal's feeding, play, social, and health care needs. But even family and designated caregivers don't guarantee that pets will have a home. Good intentions sometimes take a backseat to life's realities, such as a new spouse who doesn't like animals, a sudden desire to travel the world, or the adoptive caregiver's own infirmity. A legally enforceable pet trust offers the only assurance that your assets will be used as you wish to provide for the comfort and care of cherished animal companions. More than 40 states recognize pet trusts. Check with your attorney, accountant, or state legislator to see if yours does and how to create one. Animals Today urges you to plan for your pet's lifelong well-being. Take steps today so he or she doesn't risk becoming yet another sad shelter statistic.
Here's the problem. You've got a stain on your carpet, your clothing, your leather, your upholstery, on your car seat, and you can't get it out. What is it? Maybe it's hair dye, nail polish, even graffiti? Solution? Stains Are Out. This is the best stain remover you've ever laid eyes on, stain remover. It'll get out nail polish, hair dye, spray paint, any stain on any surface, guaranteed, period, or your money back. It's made from banana oil, oil from the skin of a banana. You can't find it anywhere else. Biodegradable, environmentally friendly, and it works. Imagine taking out graffiti off the wall. What would you pay to do that? Imagine taking tar off your car and any stain, even dye transfer, the clothing color that's transferred onto the other clothes, it solves that too. Any stain anywhere. And today, Stains Are Out is available for $29.99. You get a bottle of Hyper Concentrate. This concentrate will make 16 bottles of the best stain remover you've ever laid eyes on for $29.99. But it's the deal of the week, and here's what we're going to do. If you buy a bottle, we're going to give you a second bottle for free. That's right, $29.99. It's buy one, get one free. So call 1-888-877-0490, 1-888-877-0490. Go to mycoolgadgets.com. Check out the video there, taking out graffiti off a car. You heard me right. Surfaces like tile, concrete, bathroom fixtures, it doesn't matter. But being the deal of the week, here's what we're going to do. The first 30 customers, not the 31st, will get a third bottle for free. You heard me right. Buy one, get two free for still only $29.99. Now you're going to have 48 bottles of the best stain remover you've ever saw. It's 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to Animals Today. We're speaking to Laura Bevin, and we're talking about the proposed lifting of the bear hunting ban. Laura, how far along is this process? Is this likely to be passed?
At this point, it looks like it is going to pass. We had two meetings so far in which they've approved the staff proposals as they've tweaked the proposals for how exactly the hunt's going to take. The last vote will be in June in Sarasota, and they are expected, it's been a unanimous vote every time, we're not expecting them to change their mind.
What makes up the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission, and what is their track record on these sorts of things?
Well, the commission is made up of appointees by the governor. Generally, in the history, I've been with HSUS 28 years, every commissioner has had a hunting and or fishing background except one.
Wow.
At one time, we did have a woman who was a biologist that was on there, and she was actually on the commission when we proposed the bear hunt ban and worked with staff to, you know, really hit the science of how many bears there were, what were the populations. But she has been the only one that has not been predisposed already to, you know, catering to the hunters and the fishermen on what they want to do with, you know, our wild lands and our wild creatures. In fact, with this bear, this past meeting, the commissioner, the chair commissioner, actually told the reporters when they said 75% of the people don't want to hunt that have contacted you. Polls have shown 61% are very opposed to the hunt. Why are you moving ahead?
Yeah.
And the commissioner basically said, you know, those people don't hunt. You know, it doesn't matter what they want. They think these are teddy bears. You know, it was very condescending and insulting to those of us who care about the wildlife. The Florida black bear are our bears. They are not bears belonging to those commissioners. They're not bears that belong to the people that want to hunt them. They are our bears, and we believe that we should have some say in what happens to them.
Now, there are also concerns about using dogs for hunting and other cruel methods. Briefly explain.
At this point, they're saying that you cannot put bait out, meaning bait, you know, food to draw the bears in. But if there happens to be a feeder for deer or feral hogs on private land, you and the bear that you kill have to be 100 yards away from that bait. In a lot of states, they put out food and then shoot them with their head over, you know, in the donuts. And, you know, so that supposedly isn't going to be allowed. But then no one's in the woods checking on this. It's all on the honor system. The other proposal is no dog hunting right now, no using the dogs to chase the bear into the tree so that it can be shot out of the tree. At one point, they were talking about having bear dogs out there to trail injured dogs, and they may still propose that. The concern is that even if they're saying right now there has been a lot of hunters that want to use dogs, and the commission has been very open about saying, well, we're just dipping our toe in the water. We're being conservative. This is just the first step. So, you know, we're well aware that this is the year they float the hunt, and then it seems like they will open it up for everything because, you know, every time someone says we need dog hunting, well, let's just wait on that. Let's just try to get it started. So it will be coming even if it's not right now.
So there are a few interrelated issues, including lack of public education or knowledge, not having appropriate laws, and also code enforcement. Laura, can you briefly address these?
Well, you know, the issue becomes, you know, not having the education out for the public. You know, when you have people feeding the bears and encouraging the bears, you know, to be in a neighborhood and eat garbage, you know, you're creating the problem in the first place. And then there has been very, very little enforcement of the existing feeding bans. When the man in the neighborhood was feeding the bears and his neighbor got attacked a short time later, the penalties were, you know, very small, and they were, you know, they have not taken place very often. So we know it's happening, but there's no penalty for you putting food out. There's no penalty for putting your garbage out and letting it sit there, you know, as an attractant. We need to have in all those areas that are, you know, around bear country, as you discussed earlier, they need to know they either have bear-proof trash cans or they don't put their trash cans out until the morning, you know, of pickup. We need a lot more education, but then some people are going to do it anyway. So we need, you know, the long arm of the law to say, you know, you must do this. It's, you know, it is going to be hard. It's a long process. You look at those areas out west or in the Smoky Mountains where they have bear issues, and it's taken years, but they have reached that point. And we need to get on that road so that we can start the journey to being bear smart in Florida.
Now, also, it's a factor that habitats are shrinking and populations are getting segmented. Is that correct?
Absolutely. In Florida, we have distinct populations of the Florida black bear already. There's not, you know, one area of the state where all the bears are. They're from the panhandle, the northwest part of Florida, all the way down to the Everglades, and they're isolated. So we already have distinct populations that we have to worry about. And then, you know, there is, you know, the building boom's coming back, so they're starting to tear back into the woods and you know, build more into bear habitat. The one bright light may be that Florida passed an amendment to our Constitution that forces the state to buy more land, and hopefully it will be bought with the idea of saving more habitat, you know, for not just the black bear, but all the species of, you know, the different types of animals and foliage and everything that live in bear area. But Florida is growing and expected to have, you know, millions more people in just a short, you know, few years. We have to learn how to save enough habitat for the bears and then how to live with the bears. And hunting is not the answer. You know, the education, the bear-proof trash cans, it's been done in other states. They are living with their bears peacefully. Yeah. We need to do the same.
What happens next? What should we look for?
Well, we definitely have the meeting coming up in Sarasota in June. We are going to gear up for that. You know, even if we believe that they're going to vote to go ahead with the hunt, if we don't show up, then, and we don't let our voices be heard, then those commissioners feel justified in what they are doing. We are going to fight right down to the end and then keep fighting. Even if this hunt takes place this year, we will continue the battle to stop bear hunting in Florida. We don't believe that, you know, that when the hunt takes place that 275 bears are going to be killed. We believe it's going to be a lot more. The way that the system is set up is it's basically an honor system for the people that are going out in the woods. There's no tagging so that you know, that bear's already been counted and that bear hasn't. The way stations are not going to be there 24/7. They can show up 12 hours later. It is all in an honor system on how many bears actually get killed. So we think it's going to be a slaughter in the woods, and, you know, unfortunately, we're not going to like it, but we're going to take any bears that die there and make them a martyr and try to stop bear hunting again. We are not ever going to stop.
Good for you. Laura Bevin with the Humane Society of the United States, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Here's the problem. You've got a stain on your carpet, your clothing, your leather, your upholstery, on your car seat, and you can't get it out. What is it? Maybe it's hair dye, nail polish, even graffiti. Solution: Stains Are Out. This is the best stain remover you've ever laid eyes on. Stain remover. It'll get out nail polish, hair dye, spray paint, any stain on any surface, guaranteed, period, or your money back. It's made from banana oil, oil from the skin of a banana. You can't find it anywhere else. Biodegradable, environmentally friendly, and it works. Imagine taking out graffiti off the wall. What would you pay to do that? Imagine taking tar off your car, and any stain, even dye transfer, the clothing color that's transferred onto the other clothes, it solves that too. Any stain anywhere. And today, Stains Are Out is available for $29.99. You get a bottle of Hyper Concentrate. This concentrate will make 16 bottles of the best stain remover you've ever laid eyes on for $29.99. But it's the deal of the week, and here's what we're going to do. If you buy a bottle, we're going to give you a second bottle for free. That's right, $29.99. It's buy one, get one free. So call 1-888-877-0490, 1-888-877-0490. Go to mycoolgadgets.com. Check out the video there, taking out graffiti off a car. You heard me right. Surfaces like tile, concrete, bathroom fixtures, it doesn't matter. But being the deal of the week, here's what we're going to do. The first 30 customers, not the 31st, will get a third bottle for free. You heard me right. Buy one, get two free for still only $29.99. Now you're going to have 48 bottles of the best stain remover you ever saw. It's 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com.
Our nation was built on dreaming big. But will the next generation have to dream small when looking at the future? If Congress passes legislation that weakens our patent system, it'll be a huge blow to American inventors and jobs. People won't invest in startups. Jobs will get shipped overseas. Inventors won't be able to defend against foreign knockoffs. And the economy will take a hit that can't be reversed. Take action now at SaveTheInventor.com to help protect the American dream.
You got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea.
Well, let's hear it.
Log on to MyCoolInventions.com and submit your product or idea today.
That's a really good idea.
This is Akos the Solutionist. Submit your product to MyCoolInventions.com. You could be on our show.
Brilliant!
Be bold and submit your product. What the heck? You could only make millions.
Here's the problem. Home security systems are expensive and you pay month after month for peace of mind. Well, forget about it. The Activator security systems, recently spy versus spy, recently declassified military technology, and it's so easy to use. You take the Activator, you plug it into any wall outlet of your house, and in 30 seconds, it maps out your house. It knows every door, every floor, every window. It's like, Scotty, put the shields up. You plug a light into it, lights will turn on, stereos will turn on. It's the most awesome item. Normally, the Activator security system sells for $80, but today, $59.99, and the first 50 callers are going to get a second one for free. That's two Activators, still only $59.99. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490, or go to mycoolgadgets.com.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to the program. We often talk about the problem of dog and cat overpopulation as if it is a uniform single issue around the country. But actually, it's not. And there are large regional differences on how severe the problem of unwanted dogs and cats is. For example, huge numbers of animals are killed in Mississippi, Miami, and San Antonio due to overpopulation, whereas in New Hampshire, overpopulation of unwanted animals is really no longer a problem. In fact, some regions are in a position where they now need animals, especially dogs, for families who want to adopt. One solution is to move the animals away from high-kill areas to where there's a shortage. Makes sense, right? But how exactly does this occur? How do you develop and coordinate such activities? Renee Rustin is co-founder of Start Rescue, and her group, in a very short period of time, has transported more than 6,100 animals from areas in Southern and Central California, where overpopulation is severe, to Pacific Northwest rescues, and then to new homes. Welcome to the program, Renee.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Renee, what is Start Rescue?
Start Rescue is primarily a transport organization. We transport animals from high-kill shelters in Southern California to shelters, humane societies, and rescues that are located in other states.
How was it developed, and how did it come together?
Well, it was three friends who shared a common interest and passion in rescuing dogs. We all have an affinity for pit bull type dogs, and we were each doing it on our own. You know, I started because I was I'm a real estate agent by trade, and I was finding abandoned animals in houses that I was listing for banks. So that's kind of how I got started.
Wow.
And Steve, my partner, and Adam, my other partner, each of them were doing the same sort of work. They were rescuing individual animals, fostering, and finding them homes.
Wow. So one of the main activities of Start Rescue is transporting of dogs. Where do the dogs come from, and where do they go?
They come from the high-kill shelters here in Southern California. We primarily, at this juncture, work with Riverside Shelter and a shelter in Santa Paula called Spark. The reason that we sort of zeroed in on a couple of distinct shelters was because we found those two shelters to be the most cooperative and helpful in this endeavor.
So you have developed a process that seems to work well. Give us a little detail about the nuts and bolts.
Well, it was, you know, definitely trial and error. I had done transports, not to this scale, but I had done transports for a group that I used to work with called Last Chance for Animals. And we had done several transports out of the San Bernardino shelter. And it was very stressful because what we were doing wasn't really being done very much. And, you know, we were sort of doing it by the seat of our pants. And we would pull animals out of the shelter. And that particular shelter is very high intake. And as we were loading up our truck, there was literally more animals coming in than we were taking out. So, you know, I learned, sort of cut my teeth on it there. And then we decided, Steve and Adam and I, that, you know, we could probably improve on this model. So what we did was we, you know, over time got ourselves a very nice truck, and we honed it down to a science where we have contracts with the rescues that we work with up north. You know, they have to adhere to a protocol, and we've got it to a point now where it runs pretty smoothly, considering, you know, how many animals we transport.
So how does an overcrowded shelter partner with Start Rescue? What do they need to bring to the table, or what do they need to do, and how does the process work?
Well, you know, a sense of cooperation is key. You know, we all live in Los Angeles. Steve and Adam and I all live in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But the reason that we are focused on a shelter in Riverside is because we found that the city of L.A. shelters, the county of L.A. shelters, are extremely difficult to work with. And they're more obstructionist in this endeavor than you know, the other shelters we found that we could get cooperation from. So Riverside is just, it's a joy to work there. They are so grateful for our help and so easy. They'll provide the health certificates. They make sure the animals are vaccinated. All of the requirements that you have, you know, with interstate transfer of animals. So they make it very simple, and they're just a joy to work with.
Renee, you are an individual rescuer. How does the public participate if they want to help a particular animal by getting him or her moved?
To get them on our transport? Is that
yes.
We do take individual animals depending on whether we have a rescue destination for it. So what we have is sort of a protocol that we'll send someone. So, for example, if you wanted to get a dog on our transport and you said, Renee, you know, I have a terrier that I need to get on your transport. How do I do it? So we send you this protocol. It's a contract basically saying that you will provide all the necessary, you know, requirements for the interstate transfer. You will also be responsible for this animal to get it to the transport the day it's leaving. So if we have, you know, you'll send me video and pictures of the dog. We will send it to our transport coordinator. She sends it to all of our rescue partners up north. If one of them says, yes, I can take it, then that process begins. So then, you know, we need the health certificate, the vaccines, and someone needs to get them to the transport the day we are leaving.
Now, you mentioned about the recipient organizations. How does START develop its relationships with them?
Vetting process. We have a lot of people up north now that know who we are and have inquired about becoming partners with us because we are very easy to work with. We're very professional. You know, there's a lot more transport organizations online now that are doing what, you know, similar things that we're doing. They all operate differently. And our requirements are pretty strict. You know, have to be cognizant of the fact that these animals cannot be put down for any reason other than, you know, a life-threatening, you know, illness. If an animal is suffering, of course, we would not hold them to that. But that's the only reason you could put an animal down that you got on one of our transports. If there's need for an animal to come back, we will bring the animal back and place it somewhere else. So that's a very strict requirement. And then we also do a very heavy interview process. They have to have references. We talk to veterinarians. We talk to animal control to make sure that these are good rescues and reputable.
Right, right. Now, you mentioned you had a bus or a vehicle. How much do typical transports cost, Renee, and what's involved in coordinating them and actually conducting the transport?
It costs us about, I think now it's around $2,800 each time we take a load up. And that's going to be about 80 animals that will go on one transport. We have two drivers always, and they do an overnight stay up there. So it's the cost of having them stay up there. We want them, you know, not to have to drive, you know, there and back without some rest. And, you know, the cost of the truck, the maintenance, it's about $2,800 to $3,000 every time we send a truck, you know, up there.
So 80 animals in one truck?
Yeah, it's about 80 animals can fit in our truck. And now we just got a brand new truck we're very excited about.
Oh, good.
We're hoping its maiden voyage will either come this May or June. It's being outfitted, and it can hold quite a bit more animals, so we're very excited about that.
Very briefly, Renee, you have a few corporate partners. How important are they to START Rescue's ability to function and grow?
Well, we have gotten quite a bit of support from the ASPCA, which we are so grateful for. They've been amazing in helping us do what we do. And we've got, a couple other corporate sponsors. Bissell gave us an enormous donation for Ellen DeGeneres' birthday, because Ellen is a very, very nice and wonderful person. She supports us as well in what we do. So they're critical. Without funds, we couldn't do what we're doing. We don't charge the receiving rescues, and we don't charge people to put animals on our transport. Some transports, you know, that's how they do what they do, but ours is purely fundraising.
Don't go away. More with Renee Rustin. She's co-founder of START Rescue. You're listening to Animals Today.
This is Dave Shistokas with some very important information for business owners and nonprofit managers in the U.S. Gulf Coast area. Were you in operation at the time of the BP oil spill in April 2010? There's a very short period until June 8th to file a claim in the BP settlement. There are misunderstandings about the settlement. Organizations located well inland, unrelated to tourism or hospitality, are eligible, and there's no need to show that the oil spill was related to their damages. There's no dollar limits on claims to be paid under the settlement. BP is legally bound to pay all valid claims. Call me, Dave Shistokas, for a free evaluation of your potential claim at 312-451-5550. Any claim not filed by June 8th will be gone forever. There's no cost to find out about your eligibility at 312-451-5550 or visit shistokas.com for more. It's S-H-E-S-T-O-K-A-S.com. It takes time to properly prepare a claim, so quick action is critical.
Do you got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me. Pitch it. Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea.
Well, let's hear it.
Successful businesses start with great ideas and cool inventions. Hi, everybody. I'm John Cremins, the Doctor of Shopology. Join me and ACOS, the Solutionist, on My Cool Inventions every week. We continue our ongoing search for America's top invention. You can be the next one. Together, both ACOS and myself provide over 60 years of experience in the industry of inventing products and presenting them on shopping channels worldwide. Every show, we give our advice on how to successfully produce your product. Along with great information and featured industry guests, you'll also get a chance to listen to the inventors of some of the coolest inventions and vote on which projects you like. You be the shark. Now, if you have a $1 million idea in your head, submit it to us, and you can be selected to be on our show for your chance to be voted America's top invention. It's True Reality Radio, where you decide, and regular American families like yours are lifted one innovation, one inventor, one American at a time.
Here's the problem. Nail polish, hair dye, graffiti, tar. How do you get those stains out? Use Stains Are Out. Any stain, anywhere. Nail polish, oil, lipstick, pet stains, old stains, any stains, this will get your stain out. In fact, if it doesn't get your stain out, we'll buy the bottle back from you. Made with natural banana oil, oil from the skin of a banana, biodegradable and organic. Stains Are Out is the solution. Pour it on and get your stain out. Normally, a bottle of Stains Are Out sells for $29.99. Hyper concentrated, each bottle will make 16 bottles of stain remover. $29.99 for 16 bottles of dilution. And here's the deal. If you buy a bottle of Stains Are Out right now, we'll give you three bottles. That's 48 bottles worth. That's the deal. Buy one, get three bottles for $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolgadgets.com.
Our nation was built on dreaming big. But will the next generation have to dream small when looking at the future? If Congress passes legislation that weakens our patent system, it'll be a huge blow to American inventors and jobs. People won't invest in startups. Jobs will get shipped overseas. Inventors won't be able to defend against foreign knockoffs. And the economy will take a hit that can't be reversed. Take action now at SaveTheInventor.com to help protect the American dream.
You got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me. Pitch it. Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea.
Well, let's hear it.
Log on to mycoolinventions.com and submit your product or idea today.
That's a really good idea.
This is ACOS the Solutionist. Submit your product to mycoolinventions.com. You could be on our show.
Brilliant.
Be bold and submit your product. What the heck? You could only make millions.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Who let the dogs out?
Welcome back to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. We're speaking to Renee with Start Rescue. Renee, I would love for you to share some of Start's experiences and wisdom with listeners who may be intrigued about developing a transport program in their area. How should a person or an organization begin if they think this is something they want to create?
It takes a lot of hard work, a lot of, it's very stressful and something that you really don't want to take lightly. If you're really considering doing this, it's a time commitment.
Yeah.
and, you know, funds being raised, the logistics. You know, we've had situations where our truck will break down and we have to be, you know, quick on our feet to, you know, to get another truck out there to pick up all the animals. We have a few stops along the way that help us out if something like that happens, and they'll offload all the animals. So, you know, there's a lot of logistics that you don't even think about till it actually, you know, occurs.
What essential elements must be in place for a transport operation to have a successful start? And how much startup funding will a group need to begin such a program?
Well, you need funds, first of all, either to rent a vehicle or to, you know, buy one. We started out with a van, and we would rent vans to do it. And that was, you know, that worked for a while. And then as we grew, we realized, you know, we could do more with our own vehicle. So I guess the first thing I would tell people is that, you know, pick a source for your animals. So, you know, if you're going to work with the shelter or a rescue, you know, down here in L.A. or wherever you are, or, you know, if you just want to work with, you know, a group of people that you know that are into animals, you know, whatever you know, is your thing, then, you know, create that little team. You need a team. There's just no way to do it on your own. So you get a good group of people that are very committed like you are. And then, you know, you're going to need to raise some seed money. And then you're going to find, you know, rescue destinations. The biggest hurdle is finding those rescue destinations. And more rescues are aware of these transports. You know, I have another organization that I work with frequently that does transport by plane. So, and they're able, obviously, to go much farther than we are. We generally stay within, you know, the Oregon, Washington areas. So, but, you know, they fly, so they can go, you know, all the way to Idaho. They'll go to Montana. So it depends on, you know, what your goals are. But start out something manageable and then, you know, grow from there. But get yourself some seed money, get a good team together, and then start small. Maybe a van load of animals that you can transport. Maybe work with a rescue that, you know, is receptive to that. You know, a lot of rescues get overwhelmed because they'll pull, you know, they're racing against the clock down here a lot of times. Some animals they're following or networking really only have a few more days to, you know, to get out of the shelter alive. So, you know, team up with a rescue that might be interested in doing, you know, doing transports to other areas, and they can save more lives. Transports, generally, they're easier because you can save so many more lives than you could if you were just staying local.
Yeah. How about legal concerns? Is this a high liability area?
Well, I mean, you know, generally speaking, I mean, we have a lawyer on our team that writes all our contracts and, you know, watches our P's and Q's to make sure that we are, you know, doing everything that we should be doing legally. I mean, there's a lot of laws that you need to follow, obviously, for interstate transport of animals. If you don't have a shelter that has a veterinarian on staff that you're working with, then you need to enlist the help of a veterinarian that can do your health certificates. You know, so those are the things you just have to be cognizant of. And, you know, try and pick the best, you know, animals that you can in terms of temperament and, you know, in health. I say, yes, they should be healthy, but the, you know, a lot of times what we'll do is we'll get a dog that is, you know, maybe has a health issue, and we are asked to help network this animal, and we'll let our shelters know up north, hey, you know, this dog needs help. We'll offer you a donation if you can take this dog.
Yeah.
We know you're going to have to spend money on, you know, veterinary care, and they'll usually say yes. You know, their hearts are tugged just like ours.
Right. Now, I know START also supports spay and neuter as part of its work. Explain that part of your activities.
Well, that was when we first began this journey, we decided that, you know, we aren't going to be transporting our way out of this mess down here in Southern California. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with some of the statistics, but I'll just give you quickly a rundown. We spend in tax dollars about $200 million a year housing and, well, euthanizing animals. That's our tax dollars paying for that. That's
wow.
A lot of money. And about a million animals go into our shelters in California, and about half of them don't make it out alive. So it's a pretty daunting situation that we're facing. So again, transporting is fantastic. We've saved over 6,000 animals in the last 3.5 years. You know, for those animals, that's, you know, obviously a gift. But the ones that we can't save, you know, tug at our hearts every day. And the way to stop that is so simple. It's spay and neuter.
Right.
It's the most simple solution, and for some reason, it's the hardest to get across. And we offer, we have an arm of our organization that's all they do is fund spay and neuter programs. For example, Riverside, they're so progressive over there. They have a mobile clinic that is never, that truck is always busy. So they have lines of people that want to get their animals spayed and neutered. And they're very diligent about making sure animals are licensed in that area. So they also offer that spay and neuter service. So it's not like they're just going in there and saying, you got to license your dog, and it's going to cost you X amount of dollars if you're not spayed and neutered. They offer a solution, which is another reason why we work with them. They're very progressive. So they have a mobile clinic that we help pay for. And we also have, you know, people that will reach out to us and say, hey, I'm starting a feral cat spay and neuter program. Could you please help us? And they'll present their plan, and we'll say, yeah, sure. We'll fund 600 cats. Or we'll, you know, we have another thing that we do. It's called Pitties for Kitties. And, you know, everything we do is kind of circles around our passion for pitties. So we name a lot of things, you know, with that term.
Right.
But we'll fund, you know, a lot of programs for cats through that Pitties for Kitties. And, you know, because cats are really the ones that lose in the shelters, you know, the cat population is out of control. And we, you know, we really work hard to try and help that.
Well, the pit bulls lose a lot as well.
Oh, absolutely. But Chihuahuas now are eclipsing
right.
pit bulls.
Exactly.
So
right.
It's just, you know, it's hard to keep up. But the spay and neuter is really the way that we will get ahead of this problem, and we will be, you know, my dream is someday to be a destination shelter instead of a, one that's, you know, receiving, you know, animals through. We're going to be one of the ones that says, yes, we have room.
Right.
Send your animals to us. But, you know, we're far from that now.
Renee Rustin, thank you for being on Animals Today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals. Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org.